With Western man, there's no going back behind Christ. It's either Christ or it's nothing at all. If it's nothing at all, then he ceases to have any culture or any civilization, properly speaking. His civilization comes to an end.
Dr. Anthony Eslin, author of the best-selling book Out of the Ashes, talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
But for Western man to know Christ and then to turn away from him, to have his whole civilization built upon the Christian faith and then to turn away from that, is suicide.
You can meet and hear Dr. Anthony Eslin making the case for Western civilization at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org. It is no secret that the United Nations is happy to see world population dwindle, not dwindle to nothing, but stop growing. Now, it hasn't stopped growing, of course, but the growth has slowed, and it's happened almost globally, but especially in Western countries. It has reached that point where, well, actually, it's going to have some consequences, some big consequences that we will not be able to avoid because of the fact that we didn't have the children, we had the opportunity to have them. And we will be looking at things like, well, in the United States, the baby boom generation becoming the largest segment of the population and being over 65. All of them over 65 at some point, outpacing in terms of their segment of the population, people who are younger than them. What are we going to do when that much of the U.S. population is elderly? No one has an answer for that question. A few more kids in the past, even though it was the baby boom, a few more kids might help us take care of that problem, but we can't have them right now, can we? We're going to talk about a UN report on world population. Rod Dreher joins us on this Thursday afternoon. He's senior editor at the American Conservative and author of several books, including The Benedict Option and a recent column titled As Goes the Family. Rod, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here.
Rod, how would you respond to a Christian who's looking at some of the statistics that have come out of the UN Population Fund recent report and say, look, Christians are different. We're going to continue to have fertility, at least at replacement level. And we have strong families, so we're going to be able to weather the demographic winter that seems to be pending.
Well, I would say that's whistling past the cultural graveyard on the part of Christians. We Christians are part of this wider culture, a culture that has turned against the family. And we should be different from the rest of the culture, but if we're going to be different, we're going to have to live a lot more intentionally. Let me tell you what I mean. This UN report you're talking about has found that 40% of all births in the U.S. are now occurring outside of wedlock. And the traditional family as a model is rapidly declining. One professor of family health and population at Columbia University said that the traditional progression of Western life has been reversed because cohabiting partners are having children before getting married, and a lot of them are deciding not to have children at all. I see this as a Christian myself, and I like to think that my kids are immune to these things, but I also know that, you know, if our children and ourselves, if we are immersed in the popular culture around us, our standards will inevitably change. We see right now happening, some Christians, young Christians in the millennial generation, don't see anything wrong with cohabitation before marriage, because that's what the culture outside tells them is okay. And if we're not pushing back at least as hard from within the church on that dominant cultural narrative, we're going to lose our kids. And we see it already happening. In my book, The Benedict Option, I quote this psychologist, Judith Rich Harris, who tells parents that you better be careful about the peer group your kids get involved in, because when they get to be 13 or 14, that peer group is going to have more influence over how they think and behave than you will as parents. So this is why I believe it's really, really important for the church to get more hands-on and not only talking about sin, the things that we were supposed to talk about, but also to talk about more basic things like family formation, like courtship, and about how having children, marriage and children are part of God's plan. It's not just a choice, a consumer choice. That's the way the dominant culture thinks. But as Christians, we believe that this is the normative plan. Not everybody is called to be married and to have children, but that is what is normal. And if we don't start embracing that ourselves and teaching our kids how to think differently, we're going to lose them.
So what stood out the most to you from that recent UN report on population?
Well, the fact that population is rapidly declining all over the world. It had previously been something that we had seen only in the industrialized world, but now we can see that in the Muslim world, in Latin America, and even starting in Africa, we're starting to see population collapse. The interesting thing, though, is that it has started in the West, that is to say Europe and North America, much earlier than it has in other countries. And so they will outlast us because they've gotten on this track a lot later. And this is going to have tremendous repercussions for us culturally, economically, politically. We see it now, or we're going to see within my lifetime, what's going to happen when by, I think, 2030, 2035, there are going to be more Americans over the age of 65 than there are under the age of 18. This is something that most of us have never had to deal with in our society. So it's going to be driving our politics and our culture wars for a long, long time. And again, this is something that's going on around the world as we have lost our understanding, our natural understanding about the goodness of family and the goodness of children. You know, one thing that really shocked me, too, was a U.S. Census Bureau report that came out in 2016 showing that only 45% of Americans aged 18 to 34 believe that marriage and children are part of being an adult. I realize what a bubble I live in, Todd. I was raised not even to question whether marriage and family were good. That was everybody in my culture, my small town South. But now it's only a minority of millennials. I think that when you have a society where you have to argue for the goodness of marriage and the goodness of having children, you know, you're in real trouble. On my blog today, we had a published something, a long comment by a young evangelical millennial who's married. He and his wife both work. They're scared to have kids. They believe that they're not financially secure enough to have kids. The world scares them. And to read that, and you realize how much they're driven by fear. They probably won't have kids because they will never be able to have the kind of economic security that they think is necessary to have children. I think about my grandparents who had three kids in the teeth of the Depression. They didn't even have indoor plumbing, but they believed children were a gift from God, and that's just what you did. That world is gone now, and I think that we in the church, we have to fight really hard against these cultural trends to devalue children or to think that if we can't give our kids all the accoutrements of a middle-class American life, the kids are not worth having. One thing that the writer Mary Eberstadt pointed out in a book she wrote a few years ago is that there is a connection between not having kids or not forming strong families and the loss of faith. Family is the primary means by which the faith is transmitted to the future generations. Not the church, but family. If people don't have strong families where the parents are not only faithful, but are also modeling for them why family is good, why a Christian family is good, then chances are they're not going to be able to withstand the pressure from the post-Christian society to be afraid to reproduce.
You say that radical individualism is the universal solvent. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's the idea that achieving maximal personal autonomy, that is, the right to make all the decisions about your life at any given moment, that is the ultimate good in our society, in our consumerist society. We see this from the left and from many on the right, but it is a universal solvent because if that's what you believe, if you believe that the ultimate good is to maximize your own personal choice and freedom, then you will never make any commitments that minimize that. Or when you do, like say you make a commitment to marriage, that commitment is only contractual. You reserve the right to abandon that commitment when it becomes boring or difficult. And, you know, that is so contrary to what Christ teaches us, what the Gospels teach us. When you marry, you're supposed to die to yourself. That's not say die to yourself until you get tired of dying to yourself. That means die to yourself. I think that this general attitude that you see in our culture today, where you can abrogate vows, promises, things like that when you get tired of living by it, that is the sort of thing that dissolves a culture. And we're seeing it all around us.
Someone you have noted was sounding the alarm on this already back in the middle of the 20th century, even prior to the much vilified 1960s. Who was that and what was he observing?
A fascinating man, totally forgotten today. His name was Carl Zimmerman. Carl Zimmerman was a sociologist, one of the top sociologists in the United States. He taught at Harvard. He wrote a book called Family and Civilization. It came out in 1947, but it was reissued about a decade ago by ISI Books. It's a history, a sociological history of the family from the Greco-Roman time to the present day. And what he found out is that the collapse of civilization is always preceded by a collapse in the family. He found that he shows that in the Greco-Roman period, when divorce became rampant, when we would call it sexual diversity today, he uses the term perversity because this was 1947, when that becomes prevalent in a society and family systems begin to break up, a society cannot hold itself together. Now, Zimmerman was not a Christian, as far as I could tell. He was a man of science and a secularist. But he points out in the book how much religion and religious belief has to do with building a stable society by building strong families. What's so fascinating to me about this book, Todd, is that Zimmerman started picking this stuff out as being present in our culture way back in 1947. He said it's been going on, it's been building this falling apart of the family, this atomization has been building since at least the 1700s, but it was going into overdrive in the post-war period. Everything that we're going through now, he said the seeds were already planted and were bearing poisonous fruit back in the 1940s. What was his answer for this? It's really kind of pitiful to think that a man so smart couldn't follow the logic of his own analysis. He said we needed to bring a government panel together of scientists and experts to figure out how to get the birth rate up. I'm sorry, it's just not possible to do that without religion. I interviewed a political scientist two or three years ago, an evangelical, who told me that he had been hired by the European Union to study for them on how they can get the birth rate up without religious conversion. And he studied it because that's his profession and ended up telling them it can't be done. The only thing that's going to save your societies from population collapse is going to be religious revival. They didn't want to hear that, but there you are. That's the truth.
Rod Dreher is our guest. We're talking about a UN report on world population. When we come back, we'll revisit the subject of the European Union.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This was my first time going, and I was extremely thrilled with everything that was provided, from the materials to being able to meet speakers and authors of books.
Ben from Green Bay, Wisconsin, talking about the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Thank you for putting on the conference and providing the educational material that we can use in our world today.
Learn more about our fall Making the Case conference at issuesetc.org.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about a UN report on world population with Rod Dreher, senior editor at the American Conservative and author of several books, including The Benedict Option and a recent column titled As Goes the Family. When you attend an Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, not only will you get to receive great teaching like this, but you'll also get to participate in a live broadcast of Issues Etc., a hymn sing, evening and morning prayer, and the divine service. Our fall 2018 Making the Case conference is Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Registration is $120. That's including three meals. Thanks to Wittenberg Academy, childcare is free. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Rod, you were talking earlier about the European Union. Focus in on that, if you would. They are actually ahead of the U.S. in terms of out-of-wedlock births and the infertility rate.
That's true. The population has been in collapse for some time in most European countries. They're far beyond the replacement rate. They've tried several things, like Sweden and France in particular, have tried government policies to turn this around, making it easier for families to have more kids, but it's really had only a marginal impact. What's happening is these countries are welfare states, most European countries are, and they have fewer and fewer workers to provide, to pay taxes, to provide services, goods and services for the older people. It just can't work. That's why they're having such a terrible crisis right now with immigration. It's not in Europe. It's not just about refugees, but it's about finding workers for their industries. The Europeans don't want to have immigrants come in and change their culture, but somebody's got to run the machine. Somebody's got to do the hard work. And we're seeing in Europe now the emergence of populist far-right parties, which are in part a response to the tensions that are emerging all across Europe, political tensions, class divisions over the fact that their populations are getting much older and they don't know what to do about it. They can't figure out how to turn it around. In the same way that Europe has been a lot like America in terms of secularization, we're going to face the same thing here. It's easier for us to absorb immigrants, but in the end, somebody has got to be there to do the hard work when there aren't enough children who become adults who can do that. In our country, we have taken a lot of immigrants from Central America over the past decades, but now those Central American countries, they've hit population decline too. So that source is going to dry up. We have got to figure out at some point how to do this, how to resurrect the idea of the family as the center of our society, not the individual consumer, but the family. Otherwise, we're going to be in as much trouble as Europe is.
Most people look at a civilization like, speak broadly, like Western civilization, and they say it's too big to fail. They can't imagine. They can look back on something like the Roman Empire, and they can observe its collapse, which was first cultural, then even the structure of their civilization could not bear the weight any longer and collapsed, and now literally stands in ruins, just vestiges left to us. But they say, we're modern. We have the internet. We can fly around the world. We're technologically advanced. We are too big to fail. How would you respond?
Well, I would tell them to go back and read St. Augustine, read the City of God, read the reaction that a lot of the Christians who were in the Roman world at the time the Roman Empire collapsed, read what they said. They couldn't accept what was happening. St. Jerome, when he sitting in Jerusalem, the word reached him that the city of Rome had been sacked by the barbarians in the year 410, which was about 50 years before the whole thing collapsed in the West. St. Jerome said that it was basically their 9/11 of their time. They couldn't believe that Rome was vulnerable. But yet Rome showed itself vulnerable And within half a century, the entire Western Roman Empire was gone. St. Augustine wrote the City of God to address the terror that Christians had about the collapse of the Roman Empire. That was all they had ever known. They thought it was going to be eternal. St. Augustine said only God is eternal, that we're part of the city of man, but we're also part of the city of God. I would just say to believers today who think it couldn't happen here, why don't you send a note to the Bishop of Hippo, who was St. Augustine, and ask how his diocese is going. There is no diocese there anymore. It was completely overrun by Islam in the 8th century. It can happen here. Things are not guaranteed to last forever. I mean, the Lord is going to be faithful to us. Christ promised that the gates of hell would not prevail against his church, but he didn't say the gates of hell will not prevail against it in Europe and North America. He didn't promise that the United States was going to be here forever. So I just think that we need to be a little more realistic, not only a little more, I should say a lot more realistic as Christians, not to be fearful, not to give ourselves over to apocalyptic paranoia, but just recognize that the future is not guaranteed to us. I think about how I was raised in the 1970s by parents who were good people who thought that the social structure and the religion that we had was going to last forever. And they didn't see the threats that were on the horizon and didn't prepare us. That was how most of other parents were back then, because they had never seen it happen before, that things were very stable in their society. Well, that's over now. Now in my hometown, as I think I may have said the last time you and I talked, you have LGBT couples going to prom together. You have transgenders in school. This is a small southern town of 1,700. It's everywhere. The things that our parents thought were normal and were going to last forever are now being called into question. This is not a time to panic, but it is a time for believers to get very serious about the signs of the times.
This has been observed in many different ways, the facets of it, but you make it quite clear that what we see by way of the collapse of Western civilization has passed the point of no return. That's the most chilling part about it, is the seeds were sown generations ago. They can't be unsown, and they can't be fixed in the next 10 or 15 years. We like to see instant solutions, but there's also no apparent long-term solution in the works here. Are we indeed past the point of no return, at least with respect to our phase of human civilization?
I really believe that we are, but that's not a reason to despair. I don't think we Christians have the luxury of despair, aside from the fact that it's sinful to lose hope in Christ. I think, though, that we have to look back at the example of what did Christians do when the Roman Empire fell in the West. They didn't give up, but they had to change their way of living to figure out how to be faithful when all the things they had counted on for stability were suddenly gone. We're not going to live like that in a time of great material deprivation. At least I hope we don't. The collapse of the Roman Empire meant the fall of the economy, the fall of technology, and the real true barbarism. I hope we're not going back to that, but we are going to have to learn how to live as believers in a society where not only are the things that we know to be true put into question, we might actually have to suffer for holding on to them. I have not raised my own children in a bubble, I hope. We've protected them. We've tried to teach them right from wrong, to build their faith up, to help them be resilient. We've also taught them about what's out there in the world. We think the best thing we can do, my wife and me, is to give them that inner resilience and that hope to bear witness and be faithful no matter what the world says. The children are not machines. You know, they have free will. They're creatures of God, and there's no such thing as guaranteeing the future.
So in the time left to us, and I'm not talking about our conversation here, but I'm talking about we are both men of probably about the same pedigree and age. I've got about another 20, 30 years left. My kids are grown and semi-independent of mom and dad. What needs to change for a person like me, who's got about another 30 years and probably can, at least until I die, coast on the fumes of Western civilization?
That's a great question. It's something I think about too. I'm 51 years old. My kids are probably a little bit younger than yours are, but after they get out of the house, that doesn't relieve me of my mission to be their father. It just means that I have to stay in close contact with them, help them as I can without trying to be pushy, but to strengthen them and their own marriages and their own childbearing, give them advice, give them support financially and otherwise, but mostly just to give them encouragement and let them know that when the rest of the world tells them they're crazy for the choices they make as Christians, to let them know that, oh, you're not crazy, you're just being faithful. And I also believe that my wife and I will stay involved in the classical Christian school where she teaches here in Baton Rouge, and as well as our church, to provide that sense of witness and of hope and service to other younger families who are going to have it even more difficult than we have had. So we don't give up. St. Benedict didn't try to save Western civilization. He left the fall of Rome to go out and try to figure out new ways to live faithfully in these new and radically different circumstances. He never lived to see the fruit of his labors pay off, but within 200 or 300 years, the monastic movement he started had largely Christianized Western Europe and laid the foundation for the rebuilding of civilization. I think we faithful Christians today have to do the same thing and have to keep our eye on the long view. That's what Christian hope means, not being optimistic about how things are going to turn around at the next election or even within our lifetimes, but trusting the Lord and doing the very best we can in the time and place we've been given to live and to serve.
With about 30 seconds, Rod, is perhaps the best advice, at least in terms of this, the conversation we're having here, Christian parents can give to their kids is grow up, get married, and have kids of your own.
Yes, absolutely. But also don't think that you can do it on your own without support of your family and the community around you. That is to say, search for work and embed yourself in a church and in a community that will support your family and your growth as Christians, mothers, fathers, and children.
Rod Dreher is senior editor at the American Conservative. He is author of several books, including The Benedict Option and a recent column titled As Goes the Family. You can read it and find out more about The Benedict Option at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. You can also follow him on Twitter at Rod Dreher. Rod, thank you very much.
God, thanks so much. It's always great to be with you.
Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about the alarmed conscience in part three of our series with him on the Christian conscience in the Old Testament book of Isaiah.
Let's examine the response of our Christian community to the cultural turmoil regarding sexuality and children.
Licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Beverly Yonke talking about her presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In 50 years, we've spiked to what is now a cultural crisis from what was a nearly non-existent issue. We can wring our hands, remain unacquainted with the facts, or simply remain silent and avoid the unpleasantries. Biblical sexuality and God's created order aren't polling well these days, while media talking heads gush about the joys and justice of violating natural law.
You can meet and hear Dr. Beverly Yonke making the case for a Christian response to the transgender child at Issues Etc.'s Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.